You're listening to the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Job. Pastor Sandy will be teaching through Job chapters 25 through 31 in today's message.
Now, mankind's exploration of nature is prolific. But where do we dig for wisdom, Job asks. He says, man does not know its value, nor is it found in the land of the living. Wisdom is not found in nature. That's a problem. Wisdom is the product of supernatural forces. Only God can give wisdom. He says, the deep says, it is not in me. And the sea says, it's not with me. It cannot be purchased for gold, nor can silver be weighed for its price. It cannot be valued in the gold of Ophir, in precious onyx or sapphire. Neither gold nor crystal can equal it, nor can it be exchanged for jewelry of fine gold. No amount of money can buy wisdom. No mention shall be made of coral or quartz, for the price of wisdom is above rubies. The topaz of Ethiopia cannot equal it, nor can it be valued in pure gold. Verse 20. From where then does wisdom come? And where is the place of understanding? It is hidden from the eyes of all living and concealed from the birds of the air. Again, the source of wisdom is hidden from men and from falcons, especially on NFL draft day. Play calling and those kinds of falcons are notoriously stupid birds. Destruction and death say, we have not heard a report about it with our ears. Death hears about wisdom, but neither death or destruction produce wisdom. Now, chapter 28 also illustrates the difference between knowledge and wisdom. You know, in Job's day and in our day, man has great know-how. Job says that men mine silver and they refine gold, but the problem is they lack wisdom. Today, we split atoms, and we put men on the moon. But oh boy, we lack wisdom too, don't we? We can't solve the social ills like teen pregnancy and like drug abuse and like racial prejudice. We also lack wisdom. Sadly, even breakthroughs, scientific breakthroughs, can backfire. Technology has good and evil uses. Science can create new ways to cause destruction. That's why Job says death hears of wisdom, but it doesn't possess it. Knowledge is the accumulation of facts. Wisdom is the ability to use those facts for our good and for God's glory. And wisdom, my friend, comes only from God. Verse 23 tells us, God understands its way and he knows its place, for he looks to the ends of the earth and he sees under the whole heavens to establish a weight for the wind and apportion out the waters by measure. God isn't limited to our superficial view. He sees below the appearance of nature. He understands the reality of life. I mean, he weighs the waters of the oceans. He establishes a weight for the wind. God looks below the surface. He understands the reality of things. Here's a great quote. I have a point of view. You have a point of view. God has view. I have a point of view, you have a point of view, but God has view. Our view of reality is always colored by our perspective, but God sees life always as it truly is. And this is why God alone is the author of truth and ultimate reality. Verse 26, when he made a law for the rain and a path for the thunderbolt, then he saw wisdom and declared it. He prepared it indeed. He searched it out. And to man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom, and to depart from evil is understanding. Boy, Job comes to the same conclusion as Solomon, doesn't he? That real wisdom is found by reverencing and respecting the Lord. True wisdom is found in the fear of God. Chapter 29, Job further continued his discourse and said, oh, that I were as in months past, as in the days when God watched over me. The implication, though, is that God is no longer watching over him, that God has neglected and rejected Job. That's not true. We know that. That's how Job feels. Job is reflecting back now on the good old days when all was warm and well in his life. He says, when God's lamp shone upon my head and when in his light, I walked through darkness just as I was in the days of my prime. He's probably thinking when he was 50. When the friendly counsel of God was over my tent, when the Almighty was yet with me, when my children were around me. I mean, he's thinking back on these good old days, and I'm sure he's got tears in his eyes because there's emotion in these memories here. He's thinking back of the time when his kids were around him, when he was in his prime, when life was well, when my steps were bathed with cream and the rock poured out rivers of oil for me. Oh, what a picture of ease and prosperity. Oh, when my steps were bathed with cream, when the rivers poured out oil. When I went out to the gate by the city, when I took my seat in the open square, remember there was a time when Job was a leader in the community. He was one of the city elders. Job was like E.F. Hutton. When he talked, people listened. Job describes the respect that he received. Verse 8, the young men saw me and hid, and the aged arose and stood. People stood up when I walked in the room, men older than me. The princes refrained from talking and put their hand on their mouth. The voice of the nobles was hushed, and their tongue stuck to the roof of their mouth. Here's another expression we use that originated from the Bible. And here's why Job was so respected. We go on and read. He delivered the poor. He took care of the fatherless, the helpless, the widow, the blind, the lame. He even broke the wicked. Verse 14 sums up Job's career. I put on righteousness and it clothed me. My justice was like a robe and a turban. And notice Job's retirement plan in verse 18. Then I said, I shall die in my nest and multiply my days as the sand. In essence, I'm ready to grow old gracefully, Job says. I had this nest egg laid up for me. I had this wonderful retirement plan. It was all in place when all of a sudden God comes along and upsets my apple cart. You know, Job reminds me of the man who works a lifetime to build a retirement for he and his wife, only to find out within weeks of quitting that he has cancer, or worse, that his wife has cancer. Boy, God has his ways of reminding his people that this world is not our home, doesn't he? He doesn't want us getting too content in the here and now. He wants us looking and longing for eternity. Just ask Job about that. Well, in verse 21, Job recalls how men were awed by his counsel, that Job always had the final word. Verse 25, I chose the way for them and set as chief. But that was then. Whether days ago or months ago, we're not sure, but that was then. I know for Job it seemed like decades ago. Chapter 30 is now. But now they mock at me. Men younger than I, whose fathers I disdained to put with the dogs of my flock. I mean, I'm getting mocked by kids of men I wouldn't let watch my sheep. My sheep dogs were more reliable than them. Now their kids are mocking me. In verses 2 through 8, he describes the worthless men who make fun of him. Verse 9, and now I am their taunting song. Yes, I am their byword. In other words, everybody's telling Job jokes. Job has become the butt of all the jokes in us. They abhor me. They keep far from me. They do not hesitate to spit in my face. Imagine that. Because God has loosed my bowstring and afflicted me, they have cast off restraint before me. Job continues to describe the torment he's endured. Verse 13, they promote my calamity. Verse 16, my soul is poured out. Days of affliction take hold of me. Verse 17, gnawing pains take no rest. Verse 18, by great force my garment is disfigured. It binds me about as the collar of my coat. He has cast me into the mire, and I have become like dust and ashes. Here's verses 18 and 19 in the New Living Translation. I think it says it in a little bit more graphic way. It says, with a strong hand, God grabs my shirt. He grips me by the collar of my coat. He has thrown me into the mud. Hey, Job is accusing God of grabbing him by the shirt and throwing him out of his own house, throwing him into the mud puddle. Reminds me of what Rodney Dangerfield once said. The other day, the dog wanted to go to the door, started barking. I went over and opened it. The dog didn't want to go out. He wanted me to go out. But like Rodney, Job got no respect. In verse 20, Job, like that Jewish man who was praying at the Wailing Wall, remember him? Job feels like he's praying to a wall. He says, I cried out to you, but you do not answer me. Job pours his heart out to God while God is as silent as a stone. You know, as terrible as Job's suffering was, it would have been tolerable if God had just given him an explanation. You know, I found that the best pain reliever by far isn't Tylenol or Demerol. It's an explanation. If we know why something's happened, we tend to rise to the occasion. But when we get no explanation, boy, it's hard. It's like going to the doctor to get a shot. I hate shots. But if I'm told the reason for the shot, I can accept it, I can endure it, I might even be thankful for it. But if I'm given a series of shots without being told the reason they're being given, I'm not going to be as tolerant. In fact, I'm going to get downright ugly and upset. I'm going to pound my fist down on the counter, and I'm going to demand to know why. And that's what Job begins to do. He begins to pound his fist. And in chapter 30 and 31, his attitude begins to deteriorate. Job makes statements that he's later going to regret. He launches verbal salvos at God and about God that are way out of line. Verse 20 tells us, I stand up and you regard me, but you have become cruel to me, God. With the strength of your hand, you oppose me. You lift me up to the wind and cause me to ride on it. You spoil my success, for I know that you will bring me to death into the house appointed for all living. Notice what Job is accusing God of. He is accusing the gracious God in heaven of cruelty. He calls God a murderer. He accuses God of trying to kill him. Boy, as we've said before, in asking why, Job lost his way. If you don't hear anything else tonight, I want you to hear this. Pain has a peculiar way of distorting our perspective, even our theology. Physical and emotional pain scrambles our thoughts and clouds our minds. This is why we should never hold a sufferer to what they say while they're in the midst of great pain. You know, if someone's suffering, just let them air it out. It's probably the pain that's talking, not your friend. Don Baker, he writes this, pain speaks a strange language. It plays funny tricks on us. It makes us think things, say things, even believe things that are not true. When pain bores its way through human flesh and into the human spirit and just sits there and hurts, the mind becomes clouded and the brain thinks strange thoughts like God is dead or he's gone fishing or he just doesn't care. Sadly, Job's severe pain is starting to color his perspective in this way. Verse 24, surely he would not stretch out his hand against a heap of ruins himself. If they cry out when he destroys it, have I not wept for him who was in trouble? Has not my soul grieved for the poor? But when I looked for good, evil came to me. And when I waited for light, then came darkness. In other words, God has let me down. Job's become bitter. My heart is in turmoil and cannot rest. Days of affliction confront me. I go about mourning, but not in the sun. I stand up in the assembly and cry out for help. I am a brother of jackals and a companion of ostriches. My skin grows black and falls from me. My bones burn with fever. I mean, disease has racked his physical body. Job sums up his condition in verse 31. My harp is tuned to mourning, and my flute to the voice of those who weep. Job says, I'm singing the blues. Remember, since chapter 27, Job has been sorting out his theology. Yes, God judges the wicked, but I'm not wicked. I know I'm innocent, Job says. And I'm digging deeper. There's got to be another explanation here for my calamity. And yet God refuses to tell me. And in chapter 31, he returns to what he knows for sure, his innocence. Verse 1. I have made a covenant with my eyes. Why then should I look upon a young woman? And here Job becomes a tremendous example for every man that's here tonight. Guys, sexual sin begins in the head long before it ends in the bed. The key to resisting temptation is controlling your thoughts, and the gateway to the mind is what? It's your eyes. When it comes to sex, men are visually stimulated. This is why we have to guard our eyes. Notice this. Job made a deal with his eyes. He made a covenant with his eyes. He promised his eyes that he would never steer them in a lustful direction. Every man in this room tonight needs to make this kind of covenant with his eyes. Have you promised your eyes that you would never steer them in a lustful direction? Every man in this room has got to establish boundaries and curfews and time constraints and disciplines for his eyes. Allow your eyes free access to roam, and you are headed for shipwreck. 70% of television shows feature sexual content. 20% of adults in America view some form of pornography every week. And why is that? It's because pornography is just one click away for us all. Eyes are like stomachs. To stay in shape, you don't feed a stomach whatever is in the refrigerator. I'm learning this. You don't just go into the refrigerator and pull anything that's in there out and put it in your stomach if you want to stay in shape. You choose appropriate foods. You take control of this area of your life. And likewise, you don't feed your eyes whatever happens to be on the cable. Just because it's on television doesn't mean it's appropriate. Just because you've got the block on there. You're blocking certain things. I've got the block on there. Anything else is free game for me. Not necessarily. Make a covenant with your eyes. Don't feed your eyes whatever ends up on the tube. Make a covenant. Create a good eye menu. Do you have a good eye menu? You know, if you never look, you'll never lust. Like Job, cut the sin off at the source. Make a covenant with your eyes that you should never look upon a young woman. Verse 2, for what is the allotment of God from above and the inheritance of the Almighty from on high? Is it not destruction for the wicked and disaster for the workers of iniquity? Does he not see my ways and count all my steps? If I have walked with falsehood, or if my foot has hastened to deceit, let me be weighed on honest scales, that God may know my integrity. If my step has turned from the way, or my heart walked after my eyes, or if any spot adheres to my hands, then let me sow and another eat. Yes, let my harvest be rooted out. Job is saying, if I have sinned in any way, let me reap its consequences. You see, Job is going to do all he can here to clean out the closets. He's going to take a brutal personal inventory of his heart. He's going to go through his personal life, and his social life, and his business life. And if there's any sin here that he's forgotten and that he's overlooked, he's going to dig it up and take responsibility for it. He says, if my heart has been enticed by a woman, or if I have lurked at my neighbor's door, then let my wife grind for another, and let others bow down over her. For that would be wickedness, yes. It would be iniquity, deserving of judgment. For that would be a fire that consumes to destruction and would root out all of my increase. Job is saying, if I've been unfaithful to my wife, I deserve a big alimony payment. I deserve for her to deplete all my increase, you know. I failed to live up to my vows. So let her have my increase. If I have despised the cause of my male or female servant when they complained against me, what then shall I do when God rises up? When he punishes, how shall I answer him? Did not he who made me in the womb make them? Did not the same one fashion us in the womb? In other words, Job sees that he's no better than his servants, that all men are created equal. He has no right to mistreat his servants. Boy, pay attention to these verses. Here the Bible definitely sows the seeds that would later oppose slavery. The Bible wasn't for slavery, it was against it. Here Job affirms that all men are created equal and should be treated equally. Job continues the litany of sins that he could have committed if he mistreated the poor or the widow or the fatherless or the homeless. Let judgment come upon me, he says. Notice verse 21. If I have raised my hand against the fatherless, when I saw I had help in the gate, then let my arm fall from my shoulder. Let my arm be torn from the socket. I'll just get one of those Tommy John surgeries and I'll never throw a fastball again. I'll just accept it if that's what happens. For destruction from God is a terror to me, and because of his magnificence, I could not endure. Job hasn't committed any of these sins because he fears God. If he had, God would have judged him. Job continues, if he worships gold or if he worships the sun or moon, verse 28, it would be an iniquity worthy of judgment, for I would have denied God who is above. If he rejoices in his enemy's destruction, or if he doesn't open his doors to the stranger or the traveler, he's also willing to accept what's coming to him. Verse 33, if I have covered my transgressions as Adam by hiding my iniquity in my bosom, because I feared the great multitude and dreaded the contempt of families, so that I kept silence and did not go out of the door. In other words, in all of these sins and indiscretions, if Job is guilty, he's willing to embrace his punishment. That's not his dilemma. He's already suffered severely, and he's not guilty. Verse 35. Oh, that I had one to hear me. Here is my mark. Oh, that the Almighty would answer me, that my prosecutor had written a book. Job wants to know why his calamity has come upon him. He wants a reason. He wants an explanation. He wants a written brief from God. Hey, if God is against him, if God is his prosecutor, then God needs to serve up the proper paperwork, and Job needs to know what it is he's done wrong. He says, surely I would carry it on my shoulder and bind it on me like a crown. At this point, if Job got his explanation, he would be so elated, he would treat it as a trophy, as a crown. Here's one more round of introspection. I would declare to him the number of my steps. Like a prince, I would approach him. If my land cries out against me and its furrows weep together, if I have eaten its fruit without money or caused its owners to lose their lives, then let thistles grow instead of wheat and weeds instead of barley. Job is saying, if I'm guilty of some unethical business practice, may thistles and weeds grow in my fields instead of wheat and barley. Verse 40 closes the section. The words of Job are ended. And in chapter 32, another man takes the stage. His name is who? 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 Elihu. That's who. Job needs a reminder of who God is. In asking why he's lost his way, Job's gotten so preoccupied with why that he's forgotten who. And Elihu is going to take the next few chapters and he's going to reacquaint Job with God's greatness and God's glory. And he is going to prepare Job for chapter 38, which is the appearance of God. He's been wanting to talk to God. God's going to come and have a talk with Job. But Elihu is going to prepare him.
Did you know that God's aware of what you're doing each day? We know this because of the book of Job. God noticed Job's life and comments to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job, that there's none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil?" God was aware of Job's honor and devotion to him and knew that Job would continue in that way no matter what happened. God has noticed you as well. Every loving gesture you make toward another human being, every moment you spend in the Bible, God sees. He does see the problems too. God knows we're drawn to sin. Even though we do our best most of the time, we all fail. God provided a solution though. He sent His Son to take our punishment for every sin we'll ever commit. We can live secure in the knowledge that if we've accepted this gift of grace, our faults no longer separate us from God. We're free to live for Him and share His incredible love and truth with the world around us. Thanks for tuning in to Sandy Adams Radio. We hope you've been encouraged by what you've heard. We'd love for you to visit our website, sandyadams.org. There you'll find more teachings by Pastor Sandy, resources to help you study the Bible, and a link to our mobile app. That's all at sandyadams.org. And that's all for today. But be sure to join us again for another edition of Sandy Adams Radio.